Hello, everybody. It's Connor. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Drama with Connor and Dylan McDowell. I'm stoked because we've wanted today's guest for so long, and he is finally here. Brent Homer, you know him from The Outsiders. You will love him even more after this chat that we have with him today. Before we get into that, I want to tell you about our Patreon, Drama Plus. That's our bonus content platform where for $5 a month, you go to patreon.com/thedramapodcast and sign up to become a member of Drama Plus, and you get bonus episodes and access to our Instagram close friends, and your money supports the pod. Thank you so much for everything. We love you all for all of your support in general, and hope you really love this episode with Brent. If you're an Outsiders fan, we also chatted with Queen Emma Pittman and King Jason Schmidt. Definitely check out those chats and enjoy this one today. We love you. And see you soon. Bye.
Press play.
Curtain up, and now we're in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nominated?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, how are you? It feels like we haven't recorded in a while, but we have been recording truly every single week, sometimes multiple times a week for the last like month. So
yeah, I'm great. Life is good. I just celebrated 6 months at my job that I started in November that I haven't really, I don't think, talked about too much on the main podcast, but it's crazy to think that I spent half of a year being back at Ohio State. And also simultaneously still juggling the podcast and everything else.
I can't believe that you've been doing it for that long.
I know.
You love it though.
I love it. How are you?
I'm so glad. I'm good. I think I just celebrated 6 weeks at my new job, maybe seven.
Okay.
So it's been good, but I feel like there's been a lot of good TV on lately. And like literally every single night, I'm like either catching up on, well, it's usually a show that was on the night before that I have on like Peacock or whatever now.
Yeah.
Contrary to what you think, I am enjoying the season of Hacks.
Okay. I know. I told you I wasn't loving it.
Yeah, I really am enjoying it. I think it's really good. And I think they reinvent the show every season in a fun new way. I feel like it's lost a little bit of the charm, but as the show goes on, you have to change as the characters evolve and stuff.
Sure.
What are you thinking of The Last of Us? We're like, what, halfway through maybe more of this season two?
I'm loving it. I almost want to give the first season a rewatch. It's fantastic. And obviously we're a spoiler-free podcast, as we like to always
tout.
But I think the acting is fantastic this season. And I know that she's in a smaller part, but I'm loving Catherine O'Hara as like the therapist character.
I feel like she's going to be back because in the season trailer, she had like other scenes with Joel.
Yeah.
Wait, I think Bella Ramsey's amazing.
Oh yeah. Fantastic. Proven star. But yeah, I also want to give a little shout out to friend of the pod, Ben Ahlers of Gilded Age fame, who appeared in the most recent episode. And I think by the time this comes out, I think he'll have been in two episodes. And when he came on Drama, we asked him about it, and he had basically signed the Max, formerly HBO Max, NDA and couldn't speak on it, but he's great.
That's right. Did he give us like any teases for it, or did he just say like, I can't talk about it really, but I'm in it?
I said, I know you're in the next season of The Last of Us. Can we talk about it? And he was like, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fun. No, I think the season is good. I don't think it's as good as season one in that like, I felt as if season one was really building out. Like there were so many different storylines. Every episode was so different. Whereas this season, I'm just kind of struggling week to week at the moment.
It's giving Walking Dead vibes, which you and I famously watched until the bitter end.
It's tough to admit out loud. But anyway, Dylan, I'm so excited for today's guest. We've been chasing him and we finally got him. And I feel like we recorded with his co-star like a year ago, truly like in this same.
It was beginning of May last year. Beginning of May.
Yeah, it feels like such a nice symmetry. Oh my God.
I love it.
Anyway, can I bring him in?
Please.
All right, y'all. Our guest today is the Grammy-nominated breakout star of The Outsiders on Broadway. He made his debut in the Tony Award-winning Best Musical last year as Daryl Curtis, a role you can currently see him shine in 8 shows a week. Before carrying the Curtis family on his back, he could be seen on the barricades of Les Miserables touring across the nation. This powerhouse recently sold out 3 concerts at 54 Below, marking his solo debut alongside maestro Ben Rauhla. This James Madison University graduate has made a name for himself in a short amount of time, and we're thrilled to have him join the Drama fam. Please welcome to Drama,
Brent Comer.
That was a lovely intro, by the way. Thank you so much for that. And also, I was about to like turn it on and then be off camera. And that way it would have just been my chair and everyone would have been so confused. I thought it would be a funny joke. Probably wasn't.
Oh my gosh.
We would have been gagged. Nobody's ever done that before. So I would have absolutely loved that.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Someone has to have done it at some point.
You're the first. It's a drama first.
And, and it probably got a little giggle.
For me, at least. I mean, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I would have gotten a little giggle out of that. Yes. Anyway.
Well, welcome, Brent. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me.
Do you watch The Last of Us?
I'm waiting for the season to be over. Cliffhangers drive me crazy. And they make me so angry. So I wait till everything's done. So I can just, I don't have to wait. But I have played the game. Uh-huh. And I have watched the first season.
So you know what's coming.
Yeah. I mean, I know what the story's about. I know, like, you know, what's going on in it. I know what's coming the second season pretty much. But I remember, especially with the first season, they just had a lot of cliffhangers for me. And I was just like, damn it. And a week is a long, I'm an impatient guy. So a week is a long time.
I get it.
I admire your willpower to hold out, though, because for me, it's like so much of the conversation that happens in the week between the episodes, but I feel like things get spoiled.
Yeah. I just, no one talks to me anyway.
Right. Now, did you do White Lotus? Have you ever done?
Oh, I did. Oh, I did follow that one episodically. Okay. And also drove me crazy.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Oh my God. Guys, White Lotus, like, okay. Jason Isaacs is so brilliant. And what drove me crazy, absolutely insane about this season was there was like six straight episodes where there was like no development in like what was happening with him. He just kept staring at stuff. Like,
I know.
And I was like, there was so much potential for this brilliant actor and this brilliant concept to like have to talk to somebody about it. And like, he never does. And I'm like, and maybe that's the point. Maybe, but it was just so infuriating to me. And some people were satisfied with the ending. And I was like, no, no.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm so with you. I feel like it peaked way too early. His descent into numbness. Because he is so amazing. I actually feel that way about kind of a lot of the characters on season three, which I loved. But I just felt like they weren't as developed as seasons past. And they didn't all interact as much as I wanted them to. Like Parker Posey truly only interacted with her family most of the time, you know?
Yeah. That's the only thing I needed. And the crossover that did happen was very like, hi. They were like, was there at the pool and they're like, hi. And then they like ignore each other. And I'm like, cool.
Now, did you think the twink son was actually going to die after he had the.
Yeah, for sure. Smoothie? I feel like someone's got to die, bro. And it can't just be the guy who we all know is going to die.
Yeah.
I was just, I was kind of bummed. You know what twist did get me though? Can I spoil? I mean,
it's been out.
Oh, we've already spoiled so much of it. Whatever.
Yeah.
I did not expect that dude to be his dad.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
And I was like, is this what people felt when they watched Empire Strikes Back? When Darth Vader said that he was his father? I literally was like,
it has to be. I mean, can you imagine the gag that probably was being in theaters seeing Empire Strikes Back? Because I feel like it was...
my God, like 1984, the first spoiler, like the first. There was like this story where like they didn't tell Mark Hamill that was the line, or they changed the line. They like saying the line was like, I killed your father. And then like, they were like, don't tell Mark Hamill, but the line is now, I am your father. And like, as they were shooting, he was like, that's not true. And I was like, wow, that's actually really brilliant.
Doesn't Mark Hamill like scream after that or something?
That's impossible.
Yeah.
And he like yells no.
Mm-hmm. You're a Star Wars guy.
Dude, I'm a Star Wars guy. Not so much anymore. I like ever since Disney bought it.
Who's your favorite?
I did love Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan was good.
That was good.
But I just like, I get so annoyed when Disney buys shit.
It's just a lot to keep up with, in my opinion.
It's just like, it's like they keep pumping out so much content. And I'm just like, it's like that guy at the party who never shuts up. It's like, it's just like, okay, I'm done listening to you for a little while. But it sucks because it's like, you like the content. You just like, you don't want to have to keep up with it so much. You want it to be kind of special, you know, when it comes out.
Yeah.
I know. I loved Rogue One.
Oh yeah. Rogue One was cool. Rogue One was cool. There's so many things that came out that were so cool. And then they just did like the Disney thing where they're just like, all right, well, now we're going to release this offshoot content and then it's going to connect to the main movie and then it's going to be like, and I was just like, dude, come on, bro.
I know.
Just make a movie and a TV show.
Which movie was your fave
of the Disney?
I would say like of the three trilogies.
My favorite one.
Oh. Yeah.
Look, this may sound crazy. I do think Revenge of the Sith is an amazing structural movie. I think the way that the prequels played out practically was tragic, as everyone thinks. But like, if you look at it on paper, if you look at the blueprint of the story, I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
But then like the lines and the CGI and the like the dialogue is so bad. Like if you just had like an actual writer writing it, I know that sounds so rude and terrible to say, but if you had like someone who like was going to get into the shit and like write like a script, you know what I mean? Then we would have had something special, I think.
I agree.
I'm weirdly partial to Phantom Menace. I think it's because that was the first one I saw in theaters, you know, and I didn't know it was bad at the time.
I think the fight at the end is the best fight ever. Like,
It's amazing.
Sorry for making a bunch of Broadway, all your listeners, Broadway folks, listen to Star Wars stuff.
I think there's a crossover for sure.
There has to be.
I hope so.
Yeah,
there has to be. Anyway, Brent, okay, so we've jumped around a lot on a lot of different pop culture topics as it stands here. We've gone from The Last of Us, we've gone to Star Wars, you know, all that, White Lotus. But we want to check in with you. We always ask all of our guests how they're doing. We're wondering, are you well?
I am well. Yes, a little overwhelmed, a little stressed, but I'm well. I'm doing very well.
Good.
The best I've been in years, I think.
Really? What do you think is contributing to that?
You know, it's kind of like, we're talking about White Lotus. It's the, what was the name of the last episode? Amor Fati.
Oh,
it's sort of that philosophy of sort of loving whatever happens and sort of like embracing, letting go of things that you can't control and stuff. And not in like a depressing way or like, you know, but just like focusing on the things you can control and also finding a way to love whatever happens. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's powerful.
Which is what I'm learning, especially in the industry where like everything is social media and everything is like auditions and like all just all these things that you can't control. And it's just like the best policy is finding inner peace. And like, I spend most of my time in my apartment and I love it. You know what I mean? I felt so pressured to go do stuff and be out all the time. And that was a lot. And I just sort of felt the pressure. And now I don't really feel that anymore, which is great.
That's awesome. I mean, thinking back to a year ago, you guys were freshly opened. Obviously, I'm talking about The Outsiders. And then had a bunch of Tony nominations. Was there like just like a hectic, fast-paced energy around the show and like the whole Tony's campaign and then making it through that?
Yeah, I didn't, to be honest, all I had to do was show up and do the show.
Yeah.
For like that was my... They didn't really want me going and doing a lot of extra media stuff. I wasn't the guy for that. I guess Brody, Sky, and Josh did most of that. So really all I had to do was show up and do the show. And we felt the pressure to do well, but like it wasn't just because of the Tonys. It was my first Broadway show. It was like, so if like if I messed anything up, I'd be like, shit. And that's just personal. That's just a personal thing. But yeah, there was a lot going on. We did a lot of like interviews, but like I like interviews are fun. Like a lot of the media stuff they like made us do was like fun stuff. Yeah, I don't really know if I necessarily felt too much pressure from that, other than the pressure that I automatically put on myself. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I naturally do that.
It's been open for a year. I feel like y'all are having a very healthy run at this point. Have audiences changed over the course of the last year?
Yeah. When we first started performing, no one like, it was like quiet. Like no one, now it's like a concert sometimes. Like some audiences will just be like losing their fucking minds. And in the beginning, we didn't know if what we, obviously we believed in what we were doing and what we had made, but like, we didn't know if like anyone liked it. I like remember being like during my first couple runs for audiences, we were like, and it was just like complete silence. I think people had to decide that they liked it. You know what I mean?
Mm, for sure.
And then now that they've decided that like a community has decided that they have liked it, now the people who come are expecting to like it. And when you, it's so weird how theater is. Like if you come expecting to like something, you will inevitably like it, I think.
Yeah.
Or if you come expecting something to be bad, you'll just be looking for the bad things in it, which is what I found. So I always try to go to something being like, oh, here's all the things in it that I could really love, even if it's something I really don't want to see. Anyway, sorry. The audiences have changed. Yes. At the beginning, they were very quiet and like things were shocking to them. There's this point in the show where I slap Ponyboy, and it's the first, like, not special effects, but like light effect, and it's like a slap, and it usually gets a healthy like a gasp. At the beginning of the run, it was crazy, like, because no one saw it coming at all, because it comes out of nowhere, and I slap him, and I remember people were like, "Oh my god!" And like, and then like, I remember one night it made me break. I slapped him, and then like, we're in silence, we're in frozen, suspended stillness, and then some lady in the back, like way back, was like, "That's right."
Is it a backhanded slap?
Yeah, it's backhand.
Oh, shit,
and, bro, I whacked that kid. And, like, and I slap him, and then like a second goes by, and this lady goes like, "That's right."
I was gagged the first time I saw The Outsiders. Like, I had never read the book, had never seen the movie. It was my first time experiencing the story, and when that happened, I was shook. And then also when there's a stabbing that occurs in Act One, yeah, not to spoil, I was in awe of the violence happening on stage in front of me with the stage effects. I feel like it's really so well done.
You know what was so cool is, like, in the out of town, we didn't have any of that. We only had the rumble. And then, like, when we realized that, like, no, all these things build into each other, and like, we there's a story there. Like, there's a story, like, with the slap, and then with the stabbing, and then with the rumble. You know what I mean? Like, the slap is the first introduction of this language, and then the stabbing is like sort of like, okay, this exists and this is how it works. And then the rumble is just sort of like, this is sort of like the coup de grace of it, you know, which I really loved, because I loved the rumble in the out of town, but I didn't know where it came from. Like, you know what I mean? Like it was obviously a lot of the same choreography, a lot of the same stuff happened, but it was weird because it just came out of nowhere. Like this fight, violence, dance language that was created. And then the Coopermans, to their credit, and Danya, and the lighting team, and everybody, sound, they really put something really cool together in developing that language of the play and that world.
Yeah, I mean, it's powerful. I think the way that the world building is in general, it really speaks to that era, sort of the way that violence was running through Tulsa in general.
Dude, and that's something that also is such a violent place, man. And I think that that's ultimately where that language comes from. It's sort of like the way that I sort of internalize it, and the way that I think Donnie would agree with this, not agree with it, but like, this is the way I think about it. I think of it like a haunting, you know what I mean? Like, supernatural haunting of violence of Tulsa, and like, a lot of bad things happen in Tulsa, man. And like, I think that sort of like lives in the soil, and it sort of like lives there still. And I think it haunts all those sequences of violence are just like history sort of puppeteering what's happening. Do you know what I
mean? Yeah.
And like,
totally.
Yeah. Anyway.
What was your experience going to Tulsa? Because I know that when we talked to Jason and Emma, they mentioned that you all got to visit.
Yeah, it was a blast.
Prior to the Broadway run.
It was a blast. Yeah. It was, I can't remember. It was cold. It was January, I think. And I, like, was so taken aback at how nice everybody was, and, like, how, like, excited they were about The Outsiders. Like, obviously, it's, like, you know, it's a big thing for their town. Like, Susie Hinton is, like, a celebrity there. And I mean, she's famous either way, wherever you go.
Yeah.
But I went, and everyone was just so jazzed up and psyched that there was going to be a musical about The Outsiders. They fed us really well. We went two-stepping,
hey,
which is basic, which is of, you know, an inviting version of dancing for people who can't dance, like myself. But yeah, it was a great time. It was an awesome time. We visited the house that the movie was shot at, and we only, out of the original cast, we've only met Matt Dillon and then Francis Coppola, and then I think other people came when I was out, and I was really
okay about it. And obviously your counterpart has passed away, sadly.
Yes, I know.
Yeah
no chance, but
yeah,
god, I really wish that he could have seen it, you know what I mean? I think he would have appreciated it.
Totally. He totally
would. I think so too.
If you're adapting something, it's cool to like be like, hey, we both did this, do you know what I mean? I'd imagine it's cool. And he also seemed like he was a really, really nice guy from all accounts. And I really think that, like, you know, we could have bonded a bit over it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Actually, Dylan and I both separately watched The Outsiders film for the first time
really
in the last like month or so. And I was actually surprised at how Daryl and Soda Pop are in it a lot less than they are in the stage version. And I was disappointed because I feel like the brother connection between the three is my favorite aspect of the stage show. How can you not like walk away from that last scene or throwing in the towel, just feeling so deeply moved by the emotion and love shared between the brothers on stage, you know?
Yeah, in the movie, they just spend so much fucking time in that church.
So much time.
I'm just like, all right, is it going to burn down or what? Like,
right.
But also, like, there's a lot of things that, like, the musical truly is like an adaptation of The Outsiders. It's an interpretation of it. That scene between Daryl and Dally doesn't exist in the book or the movie. And it was my favorite part of, before I even knew what character I was going to play, or like I just read the script, and that was my favorite part because it wasn't part of the movie or the book. And it's like this conflict between those two guys that Adam created, obviously with Susie's blessing, but it's such an interesting conflict, and it's so, and it elaborates so well upon like the themes of the show. Yeah, the brothers weren't very featured in the movie, but like, you know, Susie said herself, you know, it's a story about family, you know what I mean? And I'm glad that, you know, I have the opportunity to sort of like contribute to that more so in the musical than I would have in like a filmed version of it. And at the end of the day, you know, it is about family, and something everybody says, it's, you know, it's about family chosen and biological, but like, yeah, that last scene is like, it wrecks me, man. Wrecks me every night.
You are so amazing in the show, Brent. I mean, from the Connor and I have gotten to see you in it a couple of times over the last year, and you are just this steady powerhouse presence in the show. Wow. It's, you're sort of like this, I don't want to say calm, because your character isn't necessarily always calm, but I can always just rely on you in the show when there's a lot of chaos going on around.
That's so
and your voice, man. I mean,
oh my God, for real.
Thank you, guys. That's very kind of you. I really appreciate it.
They've got you like sitting on stage for a lot of it too. I noticed that the one time. I'm like, there's all these scenes happening. And you're like at the table. I'm like, what is he thinking about?
One thing that is cool. Like, I remember, like, I actually was conscious of this the other night. I've over the past couple of weeks, I've been thinking about it, like, of like sitting and making sure I'm not sitting in the same position, or should I sit in the same position? Because like, this is like his Sisyphus thing. Like, he's just always here, and he's always at the table. But I do like find myself spacing out on stage sometimes. I'm almost always clocked in, but there's that day where like I'll be sitting on stage after I slap him, and like I've done it 440 times or something. And like I'll be sitting there like on the floor, and I'll be like, I can't wait for dinner. Like,
that's human though.
But like I'm like sitting there in front of 1,000 people, and I'm just like, and I remember like catching myself thinking about dinner, and I was like, can I swear?
Yeah.
I was like, asshole, you're in front of 1,000 people. Do your job, focus on your job. And like it was just so funny. I was like, never in my life, I have horrible stage fright. I get really nervous in front of people. I've always been that way. I always get really nervous to perform, which is ironic.
Yeah.
But never would I have thought the day would come where I'm sitting in front of 1,000 people and like thinking about dinner.
It's in your body at this point. You know, you're locked in enough to know and trust that you've got the beats.
Well, I mean, like I'm locked in. You know, when I show up, all of my entrances are stage left. So like when I show up stage left, I'm ready to go, baby. Every entrance except for my first is stage left. I spend all of the show stage left. And you want to know the funniest thing? My dressing room is on the second to top floor, stage right. So I just sit there. I just like, I'll sit on the stairs the entire show waiting to come in. And there's nowhere for me to go other than like the stage management office. And they don't want me sitting in there the whole time. But like, I'll just be sitting there, and like everybody else enters stage right. Daryl and Soda always enter left.
Wow. How do you keep it fresh for you, having done it 440 plus times?
I have a really short memory.
Goldfish vibes.
Yeah, I'm literally like, oh. I don't know. I think it is tough. It is tough when you like hear something for the 100th time, but it also like, I still get so nervous. So like I'm always sort of like dropped in because of like I try to use that fear and fire in my belly to fuel me in a positive way. It's all about like the moment, knowing that you've done it 1,000 times, but really it's about like what's right in front of you. And sometimes you just dissociate, and you're like, I've like, you're Groundhog Day, and it's like, am I just in this endless loop of this life that doesn't, and but like really all of that goes out the window when you're making eye contact with somebody in a moment that's really high stakes. Do you know what I mean? It's like they're looking to you. And like when people are talking on stage, they're talking on stage. Like they're looking at you and they are like, especially when you're with a bunch of really good actors like I am, looking at you and they're listening to everything that you say and you're listening to everything that they say. And like if you've done it 440 times, you notice differences. And if somebody says something different, you notice it. You sort of let that fuel you because that's the first time you've heard it that way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like really, yeah. If you allow the little things to be like, oh, this is a different thing. This isn't yesterday, or this isn't this afternoon. This is tonight. And that's how I've done it. Also, you just need to load your own shit. Like not in like a toxic way, but like you need to get your mind. Like for me anyway, some people don't need to do this, but like for me, like before I go on from throwing in the towel, I need to like sit there and like remember everything. Because I could be off stage and like talking and yapping forever, and I could just like completely go on stage and just like, even though I've done it 440 times or whatever it is, I still forget where the audience is, what they've just seen. And in some ways that's a good thing, but I think for this show and that moment, you need to contextualize it within like what's going on.
I'll bet.
So I sit there and I watch and I'm like, okay. It's like watching the ball as it's being passed to you, I guess.
Yeah. I have to say that throwing in the towel moment, I told Jason this last time I saw him. I think it's like my favorite song in the show. It is
oh, really?
So incredible. And the two of you sound unbelievable together. Oh,
thank you. That's my favorite part of the day, man.
Aw.
That's my favorite part of the day. Is like whoever's playing Soda, I'm always like. And then he goes in for the hug. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
What is your relationship with Jason like?
It's fun. We're just goofy. I mean, like we like. We see each other so much. He's actually, so he's hurt right now.
Right.
I forgot what happened. Yeah, his nose.
Something with his nose I saw
yeah,
on
like,
Instagram.
I don't know. Like people just be getting hurt in the show, man. It's physical. Yeah. He hurt his nose doing the fight scene and he sang through the nose injury, which was really cool. I mean, it wasn't cool that he got hurt, but it was cool that he just like hulked it out and sang through it. Yeah. So he's been gone for a while, but like our relationship's really good. It's kind of like automatic at this point. We're like Shaq and Kobe right now. We're just kind of like, not really. I don't mean that in like an arrogant way. I just mean like we just pick up what the other puts down. We just have a really good stage dynamic. Like I just communicate with Jason on stage really well. Like I know that if I screw something up, Jason will catch me. And I know that I think Jason knows that if he drops something that I'll catch him. And it's like we have a really good, like we just trust each other a lot.
Yeah.
And it's come from doing the show so many times together and like being around each other every day and talking backstage all the time. And, you know, we're actually kind of like brothers, like right now, like we're like, and also like the time between shows is so short that it's like, we're almost always together. It's like we're roommates or it's like we live together. So that's basically how I would describe the dynamic.
Yeah. It seems brotherly. That's really cool. I know you are a brother in real life. You have two other brothers. Because you talked about it in your 54 Below solo show, which was fantastic.
Yeah. No, thank you.
And I know that that kind of ties into where you discovered your love of the arts, from what I understand, at a young age. We ask all of our guests about their Ring of Keys moment. It's this moment where you determined that maybe this was going to be the life for you. It could be that moment that I think I remember from your show that you sang about and spoke about. But do you feel like there was a moment, it could even be younger than that, where you realized you wanted to pursue a life in the performing arts?
Well, my oldest brother sort of pioneered the theater thing, and I saw him perform in Les Mis when I was like 7 years old or something. And I didn't really like musicals were like, I was like, what the hell is a musical? Well, they didn't even call it a musical. We just called it the play.
Right.
Like Clay's play. Like, and like, there was no difference between a musical and a play. It's a play. And I was like, well, what's a play? And they're like, it's kind of like a movie, but it's happening in front of you. And I was like, all right. And so I like went and I was like, wait, so like they're playing pretend. I remember it was like this huge connect the dots moment for me. And I was fascinated by it because like the form to me was so fascinating. It's like, okay, so you're on this stage and you're pretending to be someone else, but I know who you are. And you're not this person. And now you're going to go back there. And so what's going on back there? Like backstage, are you going to continue to be in character back there? Where are you going? Where are these characters going? And I remember just like being like having so many questions about what was happening in front of me. I guess it was so weird. I was so overly conscious of the phenomenon of theater That's when my fascination with it started. And what I loved, and this is what I absolutely loved, is that they would come out after the show not in costume. So it's sort of like I wanted to be like, oh, I want to talk to my brother in character, but it's sort of like it's a product of the moment. I guess what I didn't understand then was that like it's almost supernatural, like you want to chase it, but it's not quite there. You know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
It makes total sense.
But like they would come back and they would be out of costume, and it's like that thing you just saw is like Santa Claus, it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, you had it there for a second, but now it's gone. And that's what makes it kind of magical to me. And then I remember coming and seeing another high school show, and they came out and met people in their costume. I was like, no, you're ruining it. You're ruining the whole point of this. And anyway, sorry. But my Ring of the Keys moment was when I accidentally signed up for a musical theater class in high school through like procedural error. And I had to sing first day, and I was horrified, but I did it mostly like as a joke. But I did like musicals, so I went up there and I sang, and they were like, "You're in the musical, kid." And I was like, "Okay."
What did you
I
sing?
sang La Vie Bohème from Rent.
Oh,
you
nice.
did like musicals. You
I
did
did.
like
I did like
musicals.
musicals, baby.
Did you start with like the Mark part at the beginning?
Yeah. I just sang the Mark verse.
Wow, some risky language in there for a high school student.
Oh, I didn't care.
Yeah.
I'm
What was your
bad
reputation
at
in high
that.
school?
I don't know. I played sports and did theater, so I was kind of like the weird sports kid. Like I was like, oh, he plays sports, but not he's kind of like a weird one. You know what I mean? Like,
Did people give you a hard time?
no, everyone was supportive of it. Everyone was really like,
That's cool.
unless it conflicted with sports, they would be like, Brent, what the, stop. Like you like, are you doing this? You doing this? And I'm like, yeah. But like it was very rare, like people from my teams would come and see the show and they would be like, yeah. And you know, it was cool. You know, like, yeah,
Ah,
everyone was nice.
that is cool.
A lot of like people who played sports went and did the musical because it was just like a, I think it was a way so they could just meet girls or something they just wanted to do for fun together. And they did it and they were good. If nothing else, they were lively. Like, you know,
Yeah.
if nothing else, like
Yeah.
they brought what they had.
Yeah.
And I loved that. Yeah, I think there's a space for everybody to try theater out.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't necessarily even need to be on stage. It's just like I just think it's a good outlet for contributing to storytelling. Anyway, that was my Ring of the Keys moment. I did the musical and I was like, this is actually really, really fun. I was so blown away because like in sports, you like draw up these plays and you're like, hopefully, if things go well, this is what's gonna happen, and we'll be able to be successful based off of a bunch of things that we can't control. And when I was in like my first blocking rehearsal, having done so many sports practices, I'd be like, so wait, it's just going to be like this every time? And they're like, yes. I'm like, every time. And they're like, ideally, yes. You didn't have to rely, like, you didn't have to hope. It was built on trust. In sports, it's like, hopefully things go this way. And in theater, it's like, no, this is the way it's happening every time. And that for me was a stress reliever. I was like, oh my God, wait. So I will go here and they will be to my left every time. And like, you know what I mean? And it's just cool.
Was
the stage fright still a part of your life back then?
Oh my God. Yeah, dude. Like, I don't know how I did it. People were like, Brent? Zombie
What were some of the high school shows? What were the hits?
Prom was the first one.
Oh,
Anyone's
cool.
familiar with it?
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
It's a cult,
It's a
the
cult
musical. Like,
classic.
people love it. Yeah, yeah.
Had a very disastrous life off Broadway. I love Zombie Prom. And then I did Legally Blonde. I was Warner Huntington the Third.
Oh, hell yeah.
Dude, I love Legally Blonde.
Did you have a love affair with the actress playing Elle Woods?
I did have a huge crush on her. Yeah.
Oh, cute.
I did have a, she was 3 years older than me. There was no chance.
Okay,
Oh, so you
okay.
were a sophomore getting parts.
Yeah,
I was a sophomore and she was a senior.
Wait, Legally Blonde is one of the best musicals of all time.
I love Legally Blonde. And I don't mean that like I think everyone sort of realizes they like it's fun, it's like jokey, but like everyone recognizes this is actually a brilliant musical. Yeah.
Structurally, it just they develop her and everyone around her. I mean, it's really so good.
I'm like, what, how the fuck? I was like, why aren't they all like this? Like anyway, yeah, like that's lightning in a bottle. This is how I describe Legally Blonde. And so I love that musical. And, you know, I did a concert version of Sweeney Todd, which is like, you should never have high school students do Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, that's tough.
What else did we do? Oh, I did Young Frankenstein, and then I did Catch Me If You Can.
Were you Frank?
I was Frank before my voice dropped.
Okay. So goodbye wasn't a struggle.
It was, but like it was like at the very beginning of like my vo I got to college and I was like, well, actually, we're gonna call an audible at the line of scrimmage here, and we're gonna like, we're gonna make some changes.
You're so into sports, and you obviously have all these sports references in your life. Do you play like any sports now, or is like that part of your fitness journey?
I don't really play sports now. I mean, because A, I can't get hurt, and
Right. No Broadway softball league.
no, also I just get like it's stressing me out. I get pissed off. I get competitive and pissed off. Like, and like I just realized that like I love sports. I love watching them and stuff, but like, and I love casually playing stuff, but like I don't want to play like a game because then I'll just like it'll become real for me. I don't want to go there. I'll get pissed off. Even if I win the game, I'll be pissed. And like it's just it's weird. It's so weird. I don't know. Like I just like get really competitive. And yeah, I don't really like playing too much.
That's fair. Who are your teams? Like, who do you root for?
Yeah.
I'm a diehard Ravens fan.
Okay. Are you from Baltimore?
I'm from Frederick. It's like an hour outside Baltimore.
Okay, that's right. You did talk about that in your solo show, which was amazing, by the way. We were at the first one.
Yes. Oh my God. I was stage fright. That was one of the most horrifying moments
Oh
ever.
my
Couldn't have
God.
told.
You nailed it.
I did get extremely emotional. You know, I worked at 54 Below for a really long time, and it was like my first time back in about 4 years when I saw your show.
Really?
And I was waiting for the right moment, Brent. I was waiting for the right moment. And when you sang I Dreamed a Dream, I'm not gonna lie, I did get choked up at the second verse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Thank you. Well, thank you guys again for coming to that. It was
Of
very kind of
course.
you.
Oh my
It was
gosh.
So
Loved
good. It was so good.
it.
Did that show change over the course of those three?
It stayed the same. I mean, other than like the variations of my rants, but we tried to keep it like organized because I could just talk and yap for hours. And Ben sort of had to reel me in and be like, okay, well, let's make sure we hit these points and then get to the song. And I'm just like, the last show I ran over because I just like, I don't know why. I just kept thinking of things to talk about. And I just really, and yeah, it's but nothing really changed. It was like, that was the structure of the show we built.
Yeah, I also loved Someone to Fall Back On. That is a beautiful song.
I think that's my favorite JRB song.
Ooh.
Oh, that's an inflammatory statement.
It's top tier for sure.
It's S tier JRB. It's top tier JRB for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I actually just saw the last 5 years last night, and hearing that music played with that orchestra, you're just like, wow, this man can write a song.
Dude,
Oh.
I went and I saw it, and he was sitting behind me, and I like sort of snuck a look back there, and he was like kind of like, it was almost like he was conducting with his head. He was was so weird, but it was kind of cute.
Fair. He did our podcast last September, and I think that was the most nervous I've ever
Oh
been.
my
Just because
God.
I had heard he's an intimidating presence in
Dude,
general.
I would, yeah, no, like I would never say a word to him. Not in a bad way. I just like would be horrified that he would traumatize
Was
me.
worried for that. I gotta say, I was worried for that the whole time, but he was
He was
honestly really
lovely.
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
Oh,
great.
great.
Yeah,
Good.
yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you have a dream role in the theater?
God, I really want to do Sweeney Todd, but I can't do that for at least 10 years.
It'll come back around, so we'll wait for it.
It will. I want to be George in Sunday in the Park. A lot of Sondheim stuff I want to play. I want to do a lot of plays. I love plays. Like I have a
Oh.
lot of dream roles in like a lot of I've always wanted to play Biff in Death of a Salesman or Chris in All My Sons.
Oh.
I feel like those are both very possible, Brent.
Oh my God. Like I want to play those roles so badly.
What about like a Stanley in Streetcar?
Oh my God. Yeah. I would love a Stan.
I could see you doing that.
I love Tennessee Williams. I love, yeah, there's just like all those like classic plays that are always just coming back. I'm just like, just give me a shot, coach.
I love it. There was one more thing I was going to say about your solo show. How did you pick the fashion? You turned looks for these three
Oh,
shows.
really?
Was that you, or did you have some
I
help?
had two stylists. One did
Ooh.
the first one. His name was Kyrie. He's a brilliant stylist. I'll give you his information so we can like plug him or something. But he picked the fit, and really like none of it was my doing. It was like me being like, oh, I like this. I like this. And like I needed a lot of help because I dress like shit sometimes. And then the second show was a friend of mine named Tenley, who is also a stylist in the city. They both really went out of their way to help me get dressed. But I loved those fits. And like, we texted about them. It was just, that was just a fun part of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that was just like, oh, we get to pick what we get to wear. And that was like, oh yeah, let's do this, this, this. And then I'd be like, what do you think about this? They made all the decisions, really. Because if I was making the decisions, I'd look like a clown. But
you'd pull it off, I'm sure.
I literally got to be dressed by people, man. Because I...
Do you feel like New York is your city, or could you see yourself living anywhere else?
Oh, I don't know. I don't. New York pisses me off, man. there's so many things about it that piss me off. But like, there's so many things about it that, like, if I didn't have, I would get annoyed. It's a fast paced city, but like, it's not efficient. Everybody's in a rush to go somewhere, but the trains are always down. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yep.
So it's like, it's kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, I love the fast pace and like the always something going on, or it doesn't have to always be something going on. You can come to Queens and like have, like, I love how New York can be a choose your own adventure kind of thing, but I probably can't live here for a very long time. You know what I mean? Like I'll probably be here for like another 10, 15 years and then I'll move somewhere else.
Would you ever want to do TV?
Oh my God. Yeah. I'd love to do TV. There's a lot of things I'd really be interested in and, you know, that I'm sort of like in the mix for right now and doing stuff and a lot of things that are really interesting and exciting, but like, there's nothing that I'm like turning my nose up at in terms of like form, straight plays, film. But yeah, I love the stage, man. I do love the stage.
It loves you right back. You are seriously so amazing in The Outsiders, and you're sticking around for a little while, I'd assume.
I'm sticking around for a little while.
Yeah, good for you. I know a lot of the principals are from the original cast too, so.
A lot of them are.
A lot of people who go to New York, they'll ask Connor and I for suggestions, and I'm like, you should still see The Outsiders. The original cast is mostly still in it, and like.
I know, we're still there. Dude. Like, a lot of us are still there. Josh is gone, but like all of the rest of us are still like there pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm. Rarely is everybody in at the same time,
right.
But like, it's so physically demanding. There's so much impact, which is really the heart. It's really what makes it hard for the dancers and stuff. And there's so much violence. Also, there's a lot of vocal violence. Mm. There's a lot of yell during that show.
Mm-hmm.
We all just yell and scream. But like, yeah, like those things where we're like falling on the ground, like we're actually falling on the ground. And like, some people just get hurt. And even if it doesn't hurt once, if you do it 8 times a week, and then you do it in fight call, like, you know, and you end up doing it like, you know, like 16 fucking times, you know?
Yeah, it's brutal.
Some wear and tear is bound to happen. It's like playing football, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, Dylan, well done.
I'm just tying in the sports themes, doing my best.
you're in Columbus, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. National champions in football, dude. Here.
OH.
IO.
Yeah.
I actually work at Ohio State.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And we went there.
Yeah. We both went there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You guys both went to Ohio State. I performed at the theater in Columbus.
Oh yeah,
with the Ohio Theater. The Ohio Theater.
It's very aptly named. Yeah.
Yeah, very aptly named. No one's confused.
Right.
Wait, which one is that? Yeah. It's actually a beautiful, beautiful theater in a beautiful little town square area.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I performed there, and like, Ohio State fans everywhere, man. You guys are, Buckeyes are everywhere, bro.
Everywhere. They wear jerseys to the theater. I mean, it's very much.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I remember they were like, it was literally like Saturday, and it was like Saturday night, and they had played earlier that day.
Uh-huh.
You had people coming in with jerseys. I was like, fuck yeah. I was like, I love this place.
Yeah. We do like to end with a dose of drama before we say goodbye. You've given us so much. You know, we've, like Connor mentioned, we covered Star Wars, Last of Us, White Lotus.
Been all over the map. It's great.
Connor and I will also share, and I'll go first. Brent, you mentioned about two-stepping in Tulsa. There's a show on Netflix that I just got really into.
Oh.
And they do two-step in it. It's called Ransom Canyon. Brent, have you heard of it?
I've never heard of Ransom Canyon.
Oh my God. I'm convinced it's actually Republican propaganda, but I ultimately love
it. There's a lot of that.
There is
a lot of.
They sneak there it in is. There, but it's Josh Duhamel and Minka Kelly. It's giving, there's like some, people are comparing it to Friday Night Lights. There's literally one football scene in the entire series, but I was obsessed with it. There's lots of eye candy for the girls and the gays and the straight guys. I mean, it is seriously so much fun.
Ransom Canyon?
Ransom Canyon. It feels like a soap opera at times, I have to say, but
I get into this and then I'm stuck on it,
maybe you might.
I don't know, Brent. I mean, it's like
it's a little slow.
Great. Yeah. Dylan hooked me on it too, and I binged it. Yeah.
Oh wait, so you're hooked on it too?
In a way, I mean, it was like a show that I had on, and I was on my phone. I was like doing chores. You know, I was like,
yeah, okay.
Taking
so
in
it was,
what I took in.
It was your company.
Yeah, yeah. Like I missed full plot points, and then I had to be like texting Dylan and our other friend, being like, "Wait, so
what?
Yeah.
What are they talking about?"
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah. It's not great, but it's silly.
Yeah,
it's
that
fun.
Is so funny. I like this is so weird. I like. I'm reading a lot of like scripts and stuff when your job is to like play pretend and tell stories. I actually like my rest is coming home and I watch documentaries.
Oh,
nice.
So it's like reverse for like what other people's jobs and lives are. Like I go to work to play pretend and live in fantasy land. And then I come home to be. And my content intake is usually like nonfiction. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is it like historical stuff or is like it
true
like
crime?
Yeah, I love watching a true crime. Dude, you name the true crime, I've seen it.
Wow.
Like, I love true crime. Like, I love documentaries. I just finished this one directed by Guy Ritchie.
Oh, my God. No.
And it's about English folks who just pull off this diamond heist and they are not successful, obviously. Because they're having an interview about it, but like it's just this story of them just like doing all this crazy shit to like rob this place of its diamonds, and I was like, y'all did this? But it's not a movie. It's not, yeah. Like it's like they're telling us like actual real things, and I'm like, oh my God.
You know what I loved? Did you ever see The Staircase?
Yeah.
I thought that was good. And have you seen The Keepers? Is that Baltimore area?
Yeah, yeah. The Keepers is like a Baltimore.
I thought that was amazing. I mean, it was obviously terribly tragic and sad.
I know all of it's terribly tragic, but like I can't stop watching it. I'm like, someone said some bullshit. Like if you watch true crime, it's not like a healthy way to disengage. I'm like, well, shut up. It's the rock on which my church is built. All right. It's not a healthy way to calm down. I'm like, shut up and watch Gossip Girl. I'm like, and like, I don't give you shit for watching that. Like, and I love Gossip Girl.
Gossip Girl is low key so good.
Dude, it is absurd, but it is like, dude, not the Gossip Girl guitar hero scene.
That's like kind of lost to history, but I'm obsessed that you know it.
Nope, not here. I remember.
Oh my God. Okay, a dose of drama for me. I'm a huge Miley Cyrus fan.
Okay.
Huge. I'm stoked for her new album coming out at the end of the month. And last weekend, she performed live versions of her new single, which is called More to Lose. And she was teasing on her Instagram. And I experienced that sensation where an artist releases a live version of a song before the studio version.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the studio version's out now and it doesn't hit for me in the way that the live version does.
Oh,
and
God, like, that's the worst.
It's such a bummer.
I hate that. But like, it's so common.
Yeah.
It's
so common.
Doing something live is just so much better. Like, it's just so much better because like, I don't know. I feel like the more I listen to things that are recorded, the more I feel they're just canned. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, maybe it's because like we're used to watching people perform live and like, it's so loud and uncanned, but like when I listen to things in my headphones, it just feels like there's like a roof to it, and the roof is very low. And I don't know, maybe I just have an insatiable ear.
Maybe. No, but I agree. I think a lot of things are too auto, like over edited too. So it's
overproduced.
They're so over edited, man. They're so overproduced. Yeah, a lot of things are just canned. I like things that feel more free and open. Like recordings that I hear that are like live performances that are just like recorded really well. Are like really the things that I love. It's just like things that are recently released that are just really, really overproduced. Do you know what I mean?
For sure. Wait, speaking of Sunset Boulevard did a live album.
Dude.
It's so good.
Sunset is crazy.
Like, I could see you playing, Joe.
I would love to play. They're closing it. Tom is bailing. He's doing the Mosquito Bowl movie. And, you know, good for them. What did he say? He wants to close it when Nicole leaves. And I'm like, dude, for real?
Well, I heard they were trying to find replacements of other
Normas.
Similar to Nicole, that have had like replacement Normas that could like be pop stars who are at a certain age, that it would feel like a that would be interesting narrative.
Like that would be so cool. Yeah, that would be so cool. And right, I don't know, you know, they're gonna close it. A friend of mine is a producer on it, and they were gonna bring it to like LA or something, and they're not doing that anymore. I don't think. It's such a shame because it's such a good production of the show, and I don't get it, but like I guess if you want something to live, you sort of like know when to end it, and if it's done for you, it's done for you, which is like which is good to be conscious of.
Well, maybe the Evita will come next year.
I'm really excited for that. Yes. I'm really excited for Evita. Anything, I'm on board. Like if he does anything, I'm gonna go see it. Like
yeah. I know, same.
Have you gotten to see anything you've really loved on Broadway this season?
I really, to be honest with you guys, I like, if I have a night off, I usually don't go to a theater.
There's too many documentaries to watch, Brent.
There's too many documentaries to watch. There's too many hours to, I need to like sit on my ass. And there are things that I want to see really, really bad. Right next door, we have Buena Vista. To be honest with you, I haven't seen anything except for the last 5 years.
Wow. Okay.
I did see Sunset, but that was, you know, a while ago. And God, that blew my mind, man. Yeah. It was so good.
It's one of my favorite things I've ever seen.
Oh my God, it's so good, man.
Same.
And, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot. There's a lot of things I do want to see. I really want to see maybe Happy Ending.
Oh, it's amazing. I think it's got a shot to win Best Musical at the Tonys.
We have a lot of shows like right around us that are really good. We have like Operation Mincemeat, Boops right behind us. And like further down the road, like there's so many really good shows that I just like haven't had a chance to see.
That's fair.
I want to see Dead Outlaw.
Oh, I want to see that too.
I did a 72-hour reading with that team for another thing that they did, and they are just brilliant. David Cromer, David Yazbek,
yeah,
a different book writer who's also brilliant. Those guys are just like, they're machines. They're so good.
They capture a vibe.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Like they captured the vibe in that room that I was in. I was like, I get you guys' vibe.
Ooh, fun.
But yeah. It was interesting, it's an interesting season. One day I'm just going to have an epiphany and be like, I'm going to the theater. Put on your Wednesday afternoon best.
Yeah, there you go.
I love this jazzy Broadway old timey voice you've got going.
I know. I'm like retreating into it lately.
Oh, so good. Well, everyone has got to see you in The Outsiders.
Please.
You're seriously so amazing. Did you ever get that, like a tattoo to commemorate your...
No, I didn't. It made me so angry because I was like about to take the leap. I was going to get a tattoo. And then they all got tattoos, like the creatives and certain band folks and certain, you know, people involved in the production. Angelina like invited them to like their thing where her tattoo artist gave everyone tattoos. And we had to do a show.
Tragedy.
And they kept it like a small thing. And I'm like, it ain't small if everyone fucking knows about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Would you get a show specific tattoo?
I want to get Dairy on my shoulder right here. Or yeah, something
like, I like that.
Something that like would have been like carved into someone's.
Yeah.
And I talked to Angelina. I was like, I was literally talking to her. I was like, I'm scared of getting a tattoo. Like, would that be limiting for jobs? And she's like, no, are you kidding me? Like 20 years ago, maybe. Like, but now they cover that shit up. I'm like, yeah, they covered up for you because you're Angelina Jolie. They don't cover me. they're gonna have to pay an editing guy to do that.
It's insane. You've had this conversation with Angelina Jolie.
I know. She's like, oh, I can get as many tattoos as I want. I was like, well, I'm sure that's great, yeah. Angeline. That's great, Angie. I'm just kidding. No, she's one of the loveliest people I've ever met. I've never met somebody so just like generous, like with her time and her like, and her attention, and like somebody who's just like basically lives on another planet, like in terms of like what she does and the things that she experiences, I'm sure, but like is so... She's such an empath that she just like, she knows who she's talking to all the time. And she takes where you're coming from into account, which is like something that I feel like a lot of people, if I was in that situation, I would lose objectivity. Angelina loses objectivity.
Wow.
Which is really what's, in my opinion, so special about her, is that she's just like, we were on the street one time and then people started to recognize her and they were like, oh, crowding around her, and I was just like talking to her, and I was like the only person she was talking to, and I just felt so special in them. And I was just like, wow, you really are just like, yeah, she's a wonderful woman.
That is so cool, because she is truly on another level of fame that's hard to grasp.
It's weird. And then you just talk to her and she's just kind of like, you know, she's just so she's lovely, but she's just, you know, she's just normal. Yeah. It's interesting. She's been very kind to me and I owe a lot to her. She's really great.
Oh my gosh. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Brent, you have so many great stories. You're so much fun. Thank you for spending this time with us. We seriously appreciate it. Where can everybody find you online?
You can find me I'm mostly on Instagram. I do have a TikTok, but I struggle with it. But you can find me on Instagram at underscore Brent Comer, lowercase underscore. That's me on Instagram. And feel free. I'm always reposting memes usually. And I will post a mirror pic every now and again.
Okay, now we're talking.
Yeah, I know.
You do a gym pic too.
I love it. I love a good gym pic. I love a good gym pic. Usually like when it's not in everybody's way, I'll be like.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's some fun stuff there. But yeah, come see The Outsiders. We love new friends.
Yay. Well, thank you again for doing the show.
Thank you,
we
guys.
So appreciate it. While everyone's following at underscore Brent Comer underscore, they have to follow at The Drama Podcast.
Do it.
I'm at Connor McDowell and Dylan's at Dylan McDowell.
That's right. Thank you again, Brent. This was so fun.
The McDowell brothers. Thank you guys for having me.
Pleasure was ours. And Connor, I'll see you next time.
Drama.